independent radio station alive.
To mark the 50th anniversary of the Watts Rebellion, join historian Dr. Gerald Horn in conversation about his book, Fire This Time, The Watts Uprising and the 1960s. That is Saturday, August 8th, 2 p.m. at Holman United Methodist Church, 3320 West Adams, Los Angeles, 90018. Also featuring Melina Abdullah, co-founder of Black Lives Matter LA, archival sound from the Pacifica Radio Archives, and musical performance by K.B. Solomon. The event is presented by KPFK's Sojourner Truth, co-sponsored by SO1 Books and Holman United Methodist Church, endorsed by KPFK's Freedom Now. That is Saturday, August 8th, 2 p.m. at 3320 West Adams in Los Angeles. KPFK 90.7 FM is the proud media sponsor. For more info, go to kpfk.org.
Yo, this is Immortal Technique. Right now, you're listening to KPFK 90.7 Los Angeles. Revolutionary commentary. You know what it is. KPFK bringing you the realness. Peace.
Harlem streets stay flooded in white powder.
Right, that always gets me up and running around, okay? So, I don't sound out of breath, though, do I? Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. It's a special fundraising edition of the show. And today we're offering you, well, a damn good show. But we're also offering you it as a thank you gift for a $120 pledge or $10 a month as a sustaining member. We're going to thank you with a copy of just a dynamite book, man. A dynamite book that we're going to be talking about that has also been turned into a play, been adapted as a play. And it's called Citizen, an American Lyric by Claudia Rankine. And the $120 pledge will give you that book as a gift of thanks for supporting KPFK and for supporting the station and for being just damn good people, okay? That's what we need. We need a lot more people to step up and stand up and step out. And that's what you do on this show. At the back end of the show, we are going to be talking about Citizen, an American Lyric. And we're going to be featuring the author of the book, Claudia Rankine. We're going to be featuring Shoey Joe Finney, who's the director of the play that's down at the Fountain Theater. And Bernard K. Addison, who's Bernard. I'm sorry. I knew somebody named Bernard, and I keep saying that name. Bernard K. Addison is an actor who has been performing at large small theaters in Los Angeles and all over the country, and he's got a very powerful part in this play. When I saw the play, I was just completely, completely knocked over by this, you know, especially one segment we're going to talk with him about. So stay tuned for all that. And opening the show up, I'm really, really pleased to be welcoming to the show, back to the show, Sansara Taylor. Sansara is a writer for Revolution Newspaper, and she's an initiator of StopPatriarchy.org. And she's currently down in Mississippi. Sansara, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be with you.
Yeah. Well, what are you doing in Mississippi?
Oh, that's a good question. It's really hot, so there's got to be a good reason to be down here. And I'm actually down here right now with Stop Patriarchy. The movement from activists from across the country came down here because across the country there is an emergency facing women's right to abortion, and probably nowhere is it more intense than down here in Mississippi, in the Deep South, in the Bible Belt, in the heart of the lynching belt, the whole history of slavery and everything the legacy of that is still vivid in this place. There's only one abortion clinic left in the entire state, and so women have to travel from hundreds of miles. Huge numbers of women in Mississippi are poor. Disproportionately African-American women have no access in their towns without enormous travel, without enormous hardship to get an abortion. And we're here because forcing a woman to have a child against her will is a form of enslavement. Having a child, if you want a child, can be beautiful. But if you don't want a child, it is a form of enslaving women. And we are here to stand up for women here and to shine a national spotlight on what the stakes are and why this whole war on women, the war on women's right to abortion, birth control, and the war on women overall has to be turned around, and it's a national responsibility. So that's what we're doing here all week, 10 days we're down here.
Now, this is not the first time you've been in Mississippi, and particularly in relation to the abortion clinic you're talking about. You know, there's been all kinds of attempts to shut that down, and I understand is there a law in existence or a law that they're trying to put into existence that would say, if this, you know, whatever, no other abortion clinic can be built in Mississippi or opened up in Mississippi. So if something happens to this one, it's bad shape.
Yeah, it's one of the overall legal assaults, and people should know there's been over 330 anti-abortion laws introduced this year across the country. There have been more than 50 laws passed to restrict women's right to abortion across the country. Abortion was a big theme. Being anti-abortion was a big theme of the Republican debate last night. And what this ends up meaning, all these restrictions, it's dizzying to keep track of them all, but what it ends up meaning is in a place like Mississippi, they've actually passed a law that says you cannot open a clinic and do abortions unless you have hospital admitting privileges at a local hospital, unless the doctors do, which is completely medically unnecessary. Abortion is completely safe. Hospitals need to take a patient if there's an emergency, no matter what. But none of the hospitals in Mississippi will grant these privileges to abortion doctors. They're Catholic hospitals, Baptist hospitals. There's religious opposition to this. And so what it ends up meaning is that, yeah, it's impossible to open an abortion clinic. The one clinic that's left has been granted an exception, but the law was ruled constitutional. So if there's another clinic that tries to open, you know, they won't be able to. The exception will not extend. And so essentially there is a ruling that says this will be the only clinic that will ever operate in Mississippi. And that's horrific, and it's a precedent that's been set. And, you know, these are setting terms across the country. There's challenges to this being worked up to the Supreme Court. And it's a very, very ominous situation. So it's just one of the many restrictions. They also have a restriction mandating that women wait 24 hours between seeing the doctor and getting the abortion. I spoke to a patient down here this week whose boyfriend is very violent, who when he found out that she was pregnant, he took away her car keys, he beat her up, he didn't want to let her out of the house. He's against abortion. She had to reschedule her appointment 3 times to get her initial seeing of the doctor. And she was terrified as to whether or not she'd be able to make it out of the house for her follow-up appointment. When there is a 24-hour mandated waiting period, it means women their lives are put in danger. This woman she showed me a huge bruise on her face, you know, and on her body. And this goes on every week across the country, but here in Mississippi, it's concentrated. You put a 24-hour waiting period. That means this woman might not make it back. It means the woman who I met who came up from Mobile, who drove 4 hours, young black woman with 3 babies already, has to figure out how to get child care. Not once, but 2 days she has to do an 8-hour round trip, plus the money for the procedure. These laws are really horrific, and people need to think concretely. So tonight we're going to do a broadcast. People can tune in, stoppatriarchy.org. We're going to tell these stories. We're going to have the voices of women. We're going to have the owner of the clinic speaking at this at 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time. We're going to broadcast it at stoppatriarchy.org, and you can tune in and watch it live, and you'll hear these stories, and you'll learn what this means, and you can join a movement to fight against this, turn this around for women in Mississippi, but also for people across the country.
Now, what kind of response have you been getting in Mississippi among the people there?
Well, it's been pretty heavy because, you know, we're in the Bible Belt, and we have been going out, and of course, immediately you run into people who say abortion is a sin, abortion is wrong, they say what their churches said, and nobody's ever heard. I mean, I don't think we've met anybody who's heard people speak about abortion matter-of-factly, positively, like it's a moral thing and a good thing when women need one to get one. So this is new to people, and we've been going into a lot of different communities, but especially the most oppressed communities, black communities, poor communities. And what we have found, though, is that we have this beautiful new brochure, Stop Patriarchy produced, that is why a fetus is not a baby, and it has the science of this. It shows what pregnancy is, how it actually develops, how it's a part of a woman's body, and it's nothing else. And we go through it with people, and we've had a number of people over and over every day we've been out who say, wow, I've never been told this. And they say, you know, they start out against abortion, and they talk it over, and they say, you know, I always thought it was a baby from the second it was conceived, but I look at this, this is not the same as a baby. And, you know, we've had a number of people who've changed. Last night, I have to tell this story. I know we don't have much time, but last night I met a young guy who was arguing vehemently. He said, you know, it shouldn't be up to a woman to kill my baby. woman shouldn't be able to kill my baby. He was just arguing, young black man. And we get into this. I said, if you force a woman to have a child against her will, that's a form of enslavement. We argued about this for a while, and finally he said, yeah, you're right. Okay, you're right. He gave me a pound. Then we kept talking. He goes, but it is murdering a baby. I said, no, it's not. It's a fetus. And we looked at the pamphlet. We went through the science. He goes, okay, you're right. And we walked one layer after the other. Finally, he shows me that he's got a text message battle going on with his girlfriend where she just found out she's pregnant and she wants an abortion, and he's been harassing her that there's no way he's going to let her do that. And we had this whole discussion. He said, well, she shouldn't be able to have an abortion without my permission. And I said, well, you guys should figure it out together, but if you disagree and you want to force her or pressure her, I said, that's not love, that's control. And he kind of backed up at a certain point, and by the end of the night, I swear to you, he sent her a text message that said, I will support you no matter what you do. I'm here talking to some lady about abortion, and she has a point, so I'm cool. And the point is, we're meeting people who have really never encountered a scientific understanding of abortion and an understanding that values the lives of women and puts women at the center of the discussion and understanding about what it means to deny abortion or what it means to enable women to get abortion on demand and without apology. And we've seen people change. We've seen people change, and yes, it's happening on a small scale. We have about 20 volunteers going out door to door in the Deep South and the Bible Belt. But if it can be challenged here, if people can change here, there is no excuse for people all across this country not going out and taking back the moral high ground, making this a battle about women, saying this has never been about babies, fetuses are not babies, and this has always been about controlling women. Let's think about the women, the millions of women, and what their lives will be like if they have this right or if they don't have this right. And let's take the moral high ground back. Let's take the political offensive back. And we have to go out there and fight for this and get off the defensive. And we have to mobilize people to stand up in resistance, in protest. And what we have found, no, I would be lying to say everybody changes their mind completely as soon as you talk to them. But people, they've formed their opinions in ignorance. They've formed their opinions having been bombarded and brainwashed by religious fundamentalism for generations. And we have to go out there and challenge that because the lives and the futures of women depend on this. And when you do that, a lot of people can change and join this fight.
All right, Sansara, we have to cut it off now, but I'm sure I'll have you back again real soon to talk about what has happened and what's going to be continuing to happen over the next period of time. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Okay, take care, Michael.
All right, take care now. And if in Los Angeles, you can listen to that, you have the screening of the People's Hearing for Abortion on Demand and Without Apology, Spotlight Mississippi. You can listen to that at Revolution Books today, Friday, August 7th at 5 p.m. at Revolution Books, all right? And that's 5726 Hollywood Boulevard. Or you can give them a call at 323-463-3500. We're going to take a quick break and be right back to talk about Citizen and American Lyrics, so stay tuned.
Shades of my skin, only add color to my tears. Oh, that splash against my hollow bones, that rocks my soul. Looking back over my false dreams that I once knew, wondering why my dream never came true. Oh, is it because I'm black, huh? Somebody tell me, what can I do?
That's right, somebody tell me, what can I do? Is it because I'm black? From Syl Johnson, Syl and Jimmy Johnson on that, and it's a very powerful, very, very powerful song. That whole album is actually very powerful. Just look for it, Syl and Jimmy Johnson. All right, just an incredible, incredible piece of work. Right now, we're moving into our discussion. There's a play currently going on at the Fountain Theater, and it's a remarkably powerful play. It's in the Fountain Theater. Everybody knows. I think. I hope they know. It's down on Fountain Avenue, 5060 Fountain Avenue, and I went to see it, and I was really knocked back in my seat. And I have to say, everybody that was in the theater at the time was also just stunned by the time it was over. I mean, people, standing ovation, yes, but it was just stunned. There was sort of so much. People were touched so deeply. And the play is called Citizen, an American Lyric, and it's an adaptation of a book by Claudia Rankine, who's the author of 4 collections of poetry. She's edited numerous anthologies, including American Women Poets in the 21st Century, Where Lyric Meets Language. And she's a recipient of fellowships from the Academy of American Poetry, National Endowments for the Arts, and many other things. She's currently the Henry G. Lee Professor of English at Pomona College. And Claudia is also going to be joined a little later in the show by Shirley Jo Finney, who's an award-winning international director and actress. And she's the director of the play that's Citizen, the adaptation of the book Citizen, that's at the Fountain Theater. And along with Shirley Jo, we have Bernard K. Addison, who's an actor who's been performing at large and small theaters in Los Angeles and all over the country and everywhere else, too.
That's
welcome,
right.
Bernard.
Thank you.
Okay. And Claudia, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Sure. Shirley Jo, welcome. Hello, Shirley Jo.
Oh, hi.
Okay, now, let's get a grip.
All of these introductions were so wonderful. I was like, okay, I was listening and absorbing. Hello, good morning, everyone.
But you know all those people. Anyway, let me say this before we move on, because I have to say it. The number to call, folks, in order to support this station and this show in particular, is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. And we really need you in this fund drive to step up and show your support. You don't get this kind of show anywhere else, all right? And the thank you gift we have for $120 pledge to support the station and the show, we will send you a copy of Claudia Rankine's book, Citizen, an American Lyric. It's going to blow your mind. I read it a couple of times, and I keep going back to it. It'll really blow your mind. And the other thing, too, is that if you don't have that $120, you can spread it out. You know, you can spread it out over $10 a month. You can become a sustainer. For any amount you want, you can become a sustainer. You know, just every month, you'll send some money into this to the station, or you'll make an arrangement for them to get the money from you. But you can pledge whatever level you want to pledge at, whatever level you feel compelled to pledge at, whether it's $5,000, $1,000, you know, a couple hundred, or $10 a month, or whatever. Whatever you can do. And I get a lot of people on the show who don't have a lot of resources. And I'm always very moved to get these letters from people weeks after the fund drive saying, what I did was I saved up my money and I got $20 here for you. You know, because those people are just as important as the people who send in $1,000. And we need the people who send in $1,000, who pledge $1,000, but we need you all. And so, again, the number is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. All right, Claudia, we're going to start with you, okay?
That's okay, Michael.
Okay. The title of your book, Citizen, an American Lyric. Let's talk about that title for a minute, because you've spoken about this as being an attempt to pull lyric back into reality, and I was really curious about what you were talking about there.
Well, there's a sense in poetry that it belongs in the world of the imagination and feelings, and it's a private investigation of things that have to do with personal stuff that goes on for a person. But I felt, you know, for me, writing, there's no personal life without a public life, and the dynamics around being an American really determines the kinds of personal feelings that you have. So I wanted to be able to marry those internal feelings with our reality, with the situations that we negotiate every day.
You know, it's interesting too, though, because for me, when you say the Citizen and American Lyric, I know what you're talking about there, and I also had this thing of it just reminded me just the word citizen in the context of what's going on over the whole history of this country, and then the story that's always presented to people. It's like, you know, you go around the world and people are like, yo, you know, things might be bad, they might be here, they might be this, they might be that, but you know what? It's actually everybody's free there and everybody's equal. And I kept thinking about what your title, when you call it an American lyric, for some reason it just kept pounding at my head, is the point about, yeah, a citizen, but no rights that a white person is obliged to respect, going back 150 years to, you know, the Dred Scott decision. And I kept thinking that dichotomy that exists here is a big part of your work.
Well, that also was part of it, the sense that for African Americans, that word citizen took a long time to embody. And I, in many ways, we're still trying to stand fully in it. So the reality is that African Americans began as property in this country, and then we had the three-fifths, the sense that you were three-fifths human, and now we see black bodies being treated as expendable by the police force. So it's been a struggle to hold the identity of citizen for African Americans.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you, too, is that you talk a lot about, and it's interesting, Claudia, because when I sent out an email about publicizing that I was going to have you on the show and we were going to be talking with Shirley Joe and Bernard at the same time, I got a comment. I got a lot of people writing to me, which I don't normally get. I get, people before the show anyway, people writing saying, oh, I read that book. I'm really glad about that. Or people saying how deeply moved they were by this. And one person in particular kept talking to me about how he had been wrestling with, since he first read your book, when it first came out, he had been wrestling with this concept of the breach between self-self and historical self for black people. And I wanted to ask you if you could talk about that a little. What do you mean by that? And, let's talk about that.
Well, I think I woke up this morning, I wasn't really thinking about myself as an African American. I was thinking of myself as somebody who has to work out and have breakfast.
the crowd.
And later, get on the phone with you guys. So that, for me, is the self-self. It's that person who's just negotiating their life. But then the historical self is that when you walk out into public as an African American, people look over and what they see is not you but a black person. And once they identify you as a black person, in comes all of the stereotypes around blackness and all of the projections of the white imagination on what that means to them. And so then I feel like I fall out. I'm no longer sort of present. Instead, I have this white imagination negotiating my skin color in whatever way they feel they need to do that. And that's when I think we start behaving through history and through against for, in whatever preposition you want to put there. But then history begins to negotiate what happens next.
Yeah, it's very heavy. And one thing I think in relation to this too, because it's and I'm not a big sports person, right? But when I saw the Serena Williams part that you did when I saw it in the play, when I read it in your book, I was extremely just really impacted by that. And you make a point about this is one area that combines kind of both of those things, the self and the historical self, and how they work. They blend together in a certain sense, like you're talking about, but they also are working at different frequencies in a certain level. But it was the place where everybody could see it.
Yeah, well, that racism comes down to seeing it, right? it's about the white imagination's projections and what they think they're seeing. And so, sports is a great place to look because you can go back and check it, look it up, replay it. Even as it's happening, it's often, if you're watching it on television, it's often replayed and replayed. So the moment gets examined and reexamined. So it's one of those, the things with microaggressions in terms of racism is that you're never quite sure. You're like, wait, did they really intend to hurt me? Did they really mean what they, what they said? And so with sports, they play it again, and you're like, whoa. Oh, wait, that really did happen.
Mm-hmm.
She really did do that against Serena. Right now I'm writing a piece on Serena Williams, and the question of whether or not if she wins the Calendar Grand Slam, what will that mean? She's already the greatest women's tennis player we've seen, and that sense that she has to keep adding and proving herself is all about race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shirley Joe, you just sounded like you wanted to comment on that. Did you want to say something about that?
Well, no, I'm just wanting Claudia to talk. But
okay.
What you heard was a vocalization I call witnessing. So when she said that you have to continue to prove and win and prove and win and prove and win, which is exhausting. I was relating to that. That's all.
Well, what brought you to this project? What brought you to this project? That's one of the things. I'm familiar with your work, and you know, as we talked, you've been on the show before, and the plays that I've seen that you've directed have always just knocked me back in my seat. What brought you to this one in particular?
Well, Stephen Sacks called and had read a review of Claudia's work in the New York Times, and he told me about it because I hadn't seen it at that point, and said that he felt that this project lent itself and the time was right, and it was the perfect storm to try to for The Fountain, and it had an immediacy to it. And and this was after and pursuing the rights to it, and he wanted me to read it to see if I was interested in doing it. And so he sent me a copy of the book, and whereupon I read the book. And it was like, oh, here's a story of my life traveled. And when I accepted and met with Claudia, I first accepted doing the project, and doing the project was like opening a door on a life's journey that I have participated and experienced. And it was just really interesting how destiny brought this project to me. And then we both met Claudia in Pasadena, and we walked this journey together, and that's how it happened.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll be back in a minute. I want to remind listeners that if you're listening now and you want to be and you should be calling up and supporting the station and the show, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Call up and pledge for $120. That can be $10 a month. You're not only going to be getting a thank you gift of this book by Claudia Rankine, Citizen and American Lyric, that we're talking about this and the play that's based on that. You're also going to be getting the station, you're going to be getting this show, and you're going to be getting a chance to stand up and to shape something in terms of what is the public opinion making apparatus in this country, where it's not just coming at you from all these various papers that spin out all this, you know, just heinous stuff day after day after day. You're getting something that actually makes a difference in changing the world, in standing up against all the injustices in the world, and actually being able to talk with each other about things of import, which is what we're doing today. So I want to tell you again, 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735 or 818-985-KPFK. And I know that all my listeners are so smart when they realize that I'm just like saying the letters instead of the numbers at the end, because it took me a while to get that. Okay. Anyway, give a call, folks, because we really need your support today. The station needs your support and the show needs your support. Now, Bernard,
yes.
I have to ask you, what brought you to the show? I mean, you had to make a decision to come in and say, I want to do this. What brought you there?
Well, the journey was that I got a call from Stephen.
Stephen's calling everybody up, right?
Stephen's calling everybody. He's doing his due diligence to make this happen. I've done several shows at the Fountain before, and also worked with Shirley Jo before. And he called me up and he said he's working on this project, and he described the project to me. You know, based on my experience with Shirley Jo, I just said, okay, let me jump in. And you know, the timeliness of it, you know, is one thing, but I always think it's always timely. Someone mentioned that in one of our talkbacks, that we keep saying how timely this work is, but this would have been a timely work 10 years ago.
Or 400 years ago,
or, you know, 50 years in the future, because this is an ever, you know, evolving, you know, issue for this country. And so by, you know, accepting, I joined the company, and we did a reading of it, and then, you know, immediately from the reaction, we were going to put it up. And so that's my journey to it.
Mm-hmm. Claudia, back to you for a minute. You know, you mentioned microaggressions. And I have to say, when you first read the book, you're going through this, and it's kind of hits you. And in my case, it hit me maybe sooner. I don't know, but it's sort of like I'm reading this, and all of a sudden, I realized right before I got to where you talk about the relationship between the microaggressions and the terrible things that are going on, you know, and have been going on generally throughout history. But there's this relationship between what some people would derisively refer to as, well, it's just that he or she is too sensitive. You know, I made a mistake. I did this. I did that. You know, oh, come on. Can't we get past that? You know, all this kind of stuff that goes on. And you've talked about these microaggressions actually having a very deep relationship with the bigger question and what today even comes down to, the slow genocide that's being unleashed. That's what I say, but you didn't say that. Although you're welcome to.
Well, you know, one of the important things about having Shirley Jo on the piece and Bernard is that in the making of the stage adaptation, there were bodies and people and intelligences that understood what it felt like to have the accumulative life of microaggressions in their own bodies. And I think part of the success of the production has to do with that, you know, Shirley Jo obviously is brilliant at what she does, but I also think it helps that it wasn't a sense of having to, let me see if I can understand what you mean, you know, mm-hmm. That kind of thing didn't have to happen. So in that sense, that is really gratifying in seeing the adaptation. In terms of the connection between the accumulation in one's body of these small aggressions, these small comments and erasures, and the bigger aggressions in society, the structural racism in the police departments, inside of one's own places of work, inside, and even the sort of odd moments like Dylann Roof just showing up in a church and murdering 9 people, those things, I think they're homegrown, and they're all of a piece. And I think that one of the things that we as Americans have to begin to understand is that things don't just happen.
Yeah.
They come mm-hmm. out of a long history, and a history that we are bolstering up constantly, so that if you have a police who shoots a black man without justification, and then that goes to the courts, and the court says that there was provocation when it didn't exist, that's another way of bolstering it up. Mm-hmm. If you have Katrina, where the relief FEMA refuses to go in because it's black bodies and those bodies don't matter, then that's another way of bolstering it up. Mm-hmm. And then you have a Dylann Roof who feels like, oh, it's my duty to go and kill 9 black people simply because they're black. That is not separate from those other moments, from what we're seeing inside of police departments or in Katrina or in these small comments that are said to people of color daily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's now one of the things, Shirley Jo, you talked about when you first got into this play, that adaptation of the book. And I want to tell people, actually, once again, that the play, I don't want to ever forget this, because I'm sitting here with a bunch of papers in front of me. It's down at the Fountain Theater, all right? And I have to get the exact times on it. Here it is. Okay. It popped up in front of me. It's playing Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. This weekend, Saturday and Sunday are sold out, but there are tickets available for Monday's performance. And it's Citizen, an American Lyric. It's currently at the Fountain Theater, 5060 Fountain Avenue. And you can go to info@fountaintheater.com. and find out more about it, all right? So don't miss this play, folks. Don't miss this play. And make your contribution to this show and the station and get a copy of the book, because you're going to read this book a lot of times. You're going to pass it around. You might want to get 2 or 3, okay, because it's going to be dog-eared by the time you're done with it, if you're anything like me. Now, Sherry Jo, you talked about when you first got this play that you sort of looked at it, you wrestled with it, and you understood that to get to the heart of what the issues that the play is presenting, that it has to be made very personal. Let's talk about that.
Oh, I said that just now, today, this morning?
No. You said it in something else that I read.
Oh. Boy, I need some more healing. Anyway. What I wanted to respond to, and I think I'll answer your question, was going into this play for the company, and a lot of my work has always dealt with the historical and also the wound of America. And then, and so I know when I have a piece or a project that deals with the historical wound, that the actors, the company, has to come to terms with their own, whether it's xenophobia, the prejudices, or the bigotry, so, or the dark side, as I call it. And so when we're at table, before we even mount the play, we go into a personal narrative. And in this particular process, we had two white actors and we had four black actors. And I know Bernard is from South Carolina, and one of our other actresses, Lisa Pesci, who is from South Carolina also. Lisa was struggling with her historical self being a Southerner. And at the table, Bernard, you can speak to this. Mm-hmm. At the table, one has to go past their own fear of the conversation. And that's what we did for 2 days. We were in the conversation, our own personal conversation. And that sharing was informative. And it provided a clearing for everyone, and people were saying they didn't know why they said yes to this project after reading it. But was something about it? There was. I'm going to say spirit that said you have an appointed time. This is your time to be here, and not knowing why, because to have the conversation of racism, to have the conversation about the responsibility of that and the awareness is a very frightening thing. But that conversation has to happen in order to face your own truth, in order to be free in your expression, in your voice. And so as we were going in our process, what we found as a company, we would come. I do a thing with actors where I call check-in. I never start a rehearsal, and especially when we're dealing with the subject matter, without just sitting and saying. And the one I always say is your feelings, your comments, your confusions, whatever, so that they have a clearing of expression before you tackle the material, and that has to happen to a. And this one was important because not only were we dealing with the subject matter inside the rehearsal hall, but when we walked out that door, there was not a line of taking off the clothes of rehearsal and putting on the clothes of the world, and then you let it go.
That's very true.
There was no letting go. There was no letting go. There was no letting go. And so it was important for us as a company to sit and be able to express all of those things that we were feeling. And what the company voiced was their awareness was heightened in their everyday reaction and encounters in the world, which was wonderful because mm-hmm. that also fed into the process of us telling the emotional truth in that piece. Now, for me, and Claudia had said that about understanding on a cellular level, you know, the material. It was and I had voiced this before, walking in that door that I have walked in, lived in, expressed in, my living, my dying, my crying, all was popping and surfacing, and the all of those emotional colors are on that stage that by the time, you know, the it was the releasing, you know, when you're giving birth, you break water. And I was in labor pains. I broke water. And when someone said, oh, Shirley Jo, are you excited? I said, I am done.
Wow.
Because I was living it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you live it, like I said, you're in, you're laughing, you're dying, you're crying of all of it. And yes, I'm very happy because our intention, the company's intention, my intention was to work within the space in between the lines. That's where the juice is. That's where the soul is. On a visceral level, that's where we wanted to, because when the audience and the performer, that is the symbiotic relationship, and that heightened awareness that we experience is the heightened awareness of in the visceral that's impacted the beingness of being human.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to let Bernard respond to that because we've got about 2 minutes left, Bernard.
Oh,
oh,
wow.
I'm sorry.
No, don't worry about it. No, I'm just saying I have to – normally this would have been a great show for the entire hour, and maybe we can figure out a way to do this again, but I have to really go full force on fundraising. Hear that, folks? I have to go full force on fundraising, so get ready to die, all right? Bernard.
Well, you know, about the personal, to me it's you know, you get a play and you look at it and you see a character. The character has a name, and you know, you do your due diligence of research and creating a personal history that is, you know, basically of the imagination. The characters on the page are called Citizen 1, Citizen 2, Citizen 3, Citizen 4, Citizen 5, Citizen 6. So there is no name. So the name is the actor. And so in order for, you know, to do the work for this particular piece, it had to be facets of my life, facets of going deeper, facets of, you know, exploring my DNA of racism, both large and small, and being able to, you know, expose myself to that. It's very interesting that I find that, you know, if you look at the people of the play, that they, if you were to put them in a class, they would probably be upper middle class or middle class. And so from there, you can actually begin to recognize people who have, you know, found a way to maneuver through the world. And still, as they walk out, they encounter things about, oh, well, you know, you're late, you nappy-headed hoe. You know, that someone that thinks they can have the right to say that to you, or not really, you know, not really thinking, you know, in that way. And so even as you move up into whatever strata you are, you know, and for me, my strata is someone as being a teacher, educator, and also an actor. And so I've made it to some point. But even at this point, that's been because of being able, finding the way to maneuver, find a way to, you know, get through. And then when you run across something that brings you back, how do you work through that?
Yeah.
So it's been very very illuminating for me to look at my life and look at where I have dealt, how I have dealt with microaggressions and my feelings toward, you know, the macroaggressions that we go out and look at social media and, you know, seeing what's happening, you know, on a larger scale and how that impacts me. So.
All right. And I wish we could go on much longer because you've just raised so many things to me. And you do bring that all to your work in this play. You bring it all in there. And it's
Thank you.
It's one of the reasons why I immediately want to say, you've got to be on my show. All right. I really, as much as hard as it is, it's breaking my heart to do this. But Bernard K. Addison, Claudia Rankin, and Shirley Jo Finney, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Sure. And thank you, Claudia.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, take care now. We're going to have to run right into our fund drive, but I also, before we do, I want to let people, remind people again that Citizen and American Lyric is currently at the Fountain Theater, 5060 Fountain Avenue, and you can call 323-663-1525. It's playing Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. All right? And get your tickets to this, folks. You do not want to miss it. You don't want people all around you saying, yo, did you see that? And you're saying, oh, no, man. No, you heard about it. Go see it. All right? And right now, we have to jump into it. So I'm just going to start flying with this. And you don't have to stay if you don't want to, man, but you're welcome to stay. I get kind of crazy up here because, listen, folks, I put a lot of trust in you today. I put a lot of faith in you today in terms of knowing that if I brought you this kind of show, if we put the kind of effort into the show that we have, if we put the kind of effort into the situation that we're facing, that if you knew that this is how important I look at this. This is how important I look at this, at what we do here, that I felt, and this is how much I respect the audience, all right? And we need you right now, though, to come back at us, okay? 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. You've just been listening to a whole discussion about a play that talks about, and actually one of the things I did want to ask Claudia about and didn't get a chance to, but she makes a comment that what she says to black people a lot of times is, you're not sick, you're not injured, you're not sick, you're injured. You know, which, and you think about that. You think about that take on this society. It's not your fault. It's not something that just mysteriously happened to you. You have been injured. And she also talks about how just getting along shouldn't be an ambition. Okay, and that's way too much what this society is forcing on people. This show is about changing all of that from top to bottom, inside and out. That's what this show is about. And I come at it from a million different ways, and you know that. That's why you're listening. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Stand up and show your support. We need this support. You know, this kind of thing, I didn't want to come in and just do a whole hour of, you know, pitching and telling you how you got to buy this, you got to buy that, you got to buy it. Because what you're getting is what we gave you this morning. You're getting the kind of quality radio that you don't get anywhere else. That's what you get when you come to KPFK, all right? So for you can show your support any way you can find possible. If you have $10 a month, okay? And I know people that go out to Starbucks got more than $10 a month, okay? And I'm just saying that because we know it's true. You know that, you know. Yeah, what is it, like $3 for a cup of coffee in Starbucks? So tell me about it, okay? But you have, but more what I'm calling on you to do is to stand up and join the people that are stepping up today and saying, I will not allow either the death by a thousand cuts that happens to black and brown people in this society, or the quick death that comes to this quick, the slow genocide that happens. You're not going to stand by and allow that to go. You're not going to stand by and allow what happens in Palestine to happen. You're not going to stand by and allow the torturing of women that happens day in and day out. You know, so that where we get fed this idea that somehow movies that are like pornographic assaults on women become hailed as great artistic achievements. We're looking at this thing where they're training us to accept the lowest possible existence we can have, and we're not doing that. That's why I'm calling on you to support this show and the station. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We need to see some people start calling, sisters and brothers, because there's not a hell of a lot of calls going on right now. But we need you to call in now. We need you to take that step. Walk over there, speed dial, do whatever you got to do to get in here on this. We've got 11 minutes to raise. We were given a quota to make, and I think we made it the first time. We didn't do that hot last week. I can't remember how much short we were, but we need to actually make that up this week. So it's up to you, and I can only call on you. And all I can do is sit behind this microphone and think, you know, I'm talking into the dark. I don't know, but I don't, you know, whenever I do that, I remember John La Roquette talked about when he had a radio show in New Orleans, and it was a late night show. It was all night show, and he got hungry one night. He put some music on. He got hungry. He went out and got a sandwich, and he came back and he forgot that the door was self locking. He couldn't get back in. The album he put on ran out, and it was just dead air until like 7 o'clock the next morning. And he said the remarkable thing was that nobody called and complained. But see, I know that's not what's happening here, because I know I hear from you all the time. And I know that this station has a group of loyal listeners. You fought for it. You fought for it when it was taken away from you. You fought for it. When it needed you, you fought for it. And when you need it, it's here. We're here for you, but only because you support the station. You support this show. That's what keeps me here. You know, I would be here no matter what, but that's actually what does keep me here, is the fact that I can bring this to you, and together we can actually make a difference in the world, all right? 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Contribute whatever you can. if it's $5, $10, $20, if you can stand up and say, you know, we've had this happen. I've been shocked at times when people have called up and said, look, I'm making a $1,000 pledge and I want somebody to match it. I'm making many $1,000 pledge and I want somebody to match it. There's all these things that we can do here. There's things that we can do to support this, to show its support. You can pledge to raise the money. You can pledge to get the money. Send it in, sisters and brothers, because you know what? Money is a funny thing, because all it does is, like, you know, a lot of times we just spend it on things that we don't even care about. You know, things that we're going to do this, we're going to get that, we're going to get this. You know, think about what happens or what a difference. Think about what a difference it makes. If that $120 that will get you as a thank you gift, Claudia Rankine's really powerful book. I got to tell you, this is one of the most powerful books of poetry, prose, and frankly, visual art that's included in this book. It's just incredible. And I'll show you. See, Bernard? It's all marked up because I'm reading going, holy hell, what the hell is this? Because it's that good of a book, and it's that timely, and it's that needed today. Right? And the book is Citizen, an American Lyric by Claudia Rankine, a really powerful book. You've got to read this, sisters and brothers. $120, $10 a month. You can set up to be a sustainer. That not only gets you the choice of getting this book, saying, send me this book, I got to see it, but it also helps you become part of a community, a bigger community. You help to create a community that will come into being around this. You know, this station, you look around it, you walk in through here, and suddenly, you know, it's true for me. When I walk in these doors, it's like walking into a whole different space. It's not many spaces like this you find. I find it at Revolution Books. I find it at other places similar. You know, not the same, but similar, where people are actually talking about things that matter, on the air and off the air, where people are actually thinking about what they can do that'll do some damn good in the world. You know, and what you can do right now, and this is not corny. I didn't mean to make that segue, but what you can do right now is you can make this call, sisters and brothers, because we need you to stand up. And I know Teddy's waiting for me to get into that James Brown thing because he used to come in and carry me out. But I can't do that anymore because I don't want to be yelling at people. I don't want to be hollering at people. I want to be actually talking with you, and I want to be convincing you to get up, to recognize what has to be done, to recognize what's needed here. And I don't even know if we've gotten any calls this time. I'd like to know, but I don't know yet. And if we haven't, we need to get them. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. It's on you, sisters and brothers. I do what I can every week. Every week, you know, you're on the air here. You do what you can to make this, in that little 58 minutes you got, you do what you can to make a major difference. And you give voice to people that don't necessarily get their voices out there all the time. Or when they get their voices out there, they're interviewed by people who are all smarmy or want to know, you know, things that are insignificant. We come in and we dig into the things that are actually reaching to people's souls, that actually grasp what people's work is about, what they're trying to do, why it's important. Whether it's a scientist who's talking about, you know, the trip to Pluto, or the Voyager going out in there, and, you know, what's significant about that, or it's, you know, people talking about the incredibly horrific stuff that's going on all over the country in relation to the police murdering black people. Whether it's all of these things, you know, the shows, the music, everything is put together very carefully because it means that much. It means that much to me, and it means that much to the people that listen. I know it because you write to me and you tell me how much it means to you. And when I see you, you talk to me, you always come up. I'm always having people come and say, yo, that piece you did on this, you know, when we did the interview around the half has never been told, the history of capitalism and slavery, that was, you know, that interview, I've never had more people come up and tell me how moved they were by that, how incredibly powerful they found what was being said there, and how they didn't know about the book. They didn't know about the book until they heard it on this show. This is the kind of things that we bring you, but we can only do that with your support. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. And, you know, people keep telling me, don't say it so loud, man. Slow down, or so fast. Slow down. And I'll do it but I don't really believe you need to, because if you're listening, I know you know. But it's 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Sisters and brothers, we're sending up all kinds of signals into the sky. Jerry Quickly used to talk about sending the bat signal up in the air. Well, that's what we got, okay? We're sending it up. We're sending out. We're blowing horns. We're trying to talk to people about the need for you to step up now and show your support. Whatever you can do, it's needed. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We have less than 5 minutes to try to make some kind of showing, sisters and brothers. We have less than 5 minutes to make a showing that says that we can do this kind of programming where we can have some serious, deep discussion with people, whether it's around the, you know, what's going on in Mississippi about and in the country at large around abortion rights and around the oppression of women, and then moving into Citizen and American Lyric, and the whole questions that all the questions we were talking about, the very deep questions, the fact that, you know, and this book, I tell you, this book is really incredible, because you start off reading these things that are, you know, if you were sort of like clueless, you might say, well, these are small, minor things. Okay, somebody got your name wrong. Okay, somebody mistook you for her maid or somebody, you know, and you're kind of like, but then you realize, you know, if you have any sense, you realize that these things are what Mao used to call the death of a thousand cuts, you know, but they don't, the problem is that your soul dies with all this, but it also is deeply connected to, as Claudia was talking about, it's deeply connected to the whole way, the bigger thing, the bigger genocidal thing that goes on, the bigger assaults, the bigger, the attempt to crush an entire people. And quite frankly, in this society right now is saying over and over and over, they don't have no need for black people right now. They don't have no need for black and brown people. They have to, you know, you look at the programs. What was going on in New Orleans when they just said, we're not, and Claudia talks about this in her book, we're not worried about that. And people stand there saying, they're not coming. They're not coming. Sitting on a roof, they're not coming. I went down to New Orleans, and I'm going to be playing, you know, right after that. And people who are longtime listeners know that. I went down and interviewed all kinds of people around that. And what I got told about people who were just shocked, the greatest disbursement of black people since the Civil War, since, you know, this has been since the, you know, when they turned over Reconstruction. This is, they just, and I interviewed one guy who completely lost his family because he went into a diabetic coma, woke up, his family was spread out all over the place, and had no idea where they were, and no way to get hold of them. Nobody could find them. Think about how that got repeated and repeated and repeated. And it's only places like this where you get this kind of thing. This is what we care about. This is what we are about bringing to you. We're bringing to you the exposure of these things, but we're also bringing to you the calls to the people who are searching for solutions to it. 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. Sisters and brothers, we have 2 minutes left, and I need you to call now. I don't think I've ever made as fervent a plea as I'm making now. And it's not a plea. I hate saying plea. As fervent a call to you as I am now. This is deeply felt, deeply. And because I did believe that if we came in and we had some very good content and some very serious content on this, that you would turn around and say, okay, I'm going to contribute to this because I know we need this. 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. You've got a limited, and maybe a minute. You're going to have a minute to do it. And I'll tell you right now, okay, it's coming up on a minute. You got a minute left, okay? You got a minute left to make that call. Flood the phone room, and Teddy's going to drive me out right now, all right? All right, you got the call. We got to go out. All right, man. All right, well, you can play that music. You know, you could even play a little Syl Johnson again if you wanted to, man, because that's what we're talking about, sisters and brothers. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Give a call now and support the show, support this station. $120, $10 a month builds community, builds a stronger KPFK, and supports this show. You can do it $10 a month, and you can get, for $120, you will get the thank you gift, Citizen and American Lyric, a book that's going to change your life, all right? I got to tell you that. It is going to change your life. And for whatever else you got, you get to know that you are helping. Whether it's $10, whether it's $1,000, you are helping make the difference in the survival of this station, in the survival of this show, in the survival of the kind of radio that's so rare in this country, but so needed. 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. That's